coming up on today's art-themed vandalism podcast. A bit of this.
It's like a, I guess it's like a milk airship.
I've never flown in a milk airship.
Yeah.
But I reckon it'd be quite milky fun.
And a bit of this.
I'm more happy doing a podcast than I would be doing being the Pope. Unless you did a Popecast. Does he do Popecast?
Yeah, he does do Popecast, doesn't he? Like every Sunday at least.
Ciao e benvenuto all'Arte Moderna, un podcast spazzatore.
Hello and welcome to Modern Art is Rubbish podcast number 4. And are you all right, Tom?
Yeah, I'm all right. It's lovely to talk to you, Marcus.
Yeah, good to speak to you, Tom. So today, as you've probably heard with my introduction, we've got a bit of an Italian flavour to the podcast.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because today it's going to be about Maurizio Catalan.
Yes.
Maurizio Catalan is like the art world trickster or prankster. You never know what stunt he's going to do next, and he's always escaping. He even hires someone to be himself at interviews and at public appearances.
So he picks like random people, his friends, to represent him in interview situations, or?
No, he's got one guy that speaks for him, Massimiliano Gioni, and he's like a sort of a double, and he'll make public appearances and do radio TV interviews.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So here's a brief biography of him, and then we'll get on to the first piece.
Excellent.
So briefly, he was born in Padua in Italy in 1960. He comes from quite a poor family. He spent most of his 20s scraping a living, going from job to job. He eventually found a more secure job in the 80s as a furniture maker. So you think he's been through all this. Come around about 1989, well, actually it was 1989, he managed to secure his first exhibition. He's been offered this great opportunity and he's out of ideas. So what he does is he locks the gallery and he puts up a sign that reads Torno subito, which means in Italian, I'll be back, or be back soon. A bit sort of like the, it's kind of like the Arnold Schwarzenegger of art statements. So people turn up and they see this sign and they're thinking, where's the artist? There was no artist. He wasn't there. He wasn't there to be seen. So I assume that someone tried the door and realised that they couldn't even get into the gallery. I mean, what would you do? I mean, Tom, you come to this, you turn up and there's nothing there. I mean, I've been to a shop where that happened. I went to get some shop and it said back in 5 minutes. Actually, today, literally today, I went to go and get some Coca-Cola or Pepsi-Cola, depending on what brand you prefer. And
yeah, but
shut.
I mean,
the off license
was shut.
You'd
be disappointed. You've turned up there with your friend or your partner or whatever,
yeah,
and you're expecting to see a show and it's not on. So you know, you're in the middle of Milan. You're probably like, I don't know, a tourist or an art lover. I don't know, but I mean, you know, it's not gonna like ruin your life, is it?
Well, it inconvenienced me today when I went to the local off license to get some fizzy pop, and it was closed, and I had to go to the shop across the road to get my fizzy pop. The ironic thing was, I probably saved myself some money on the purchase. So by them going away for 5 minutes, they probably lost out on probably what was quite a big markup.
Oh, right, yeah. So is that going to change your behaviour in the long term?
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah, I say that, but you're a Catalan fan, so it's like if you're a fan of this offer and it shuts, even though you're paying a markup. Really, I mean, if you are a fan of this offer, you're going to go back, aren't you, another time?
Yeah, but it's like going to an off-licence. You don't know what the off-licence does.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because at the time, Catalan wasn't known. And another point to be made is, how would the people that actually liked the work, they wouldn't be able to leave their names and addresses. And also, it can't have done much good for the reputation of the gallery and Maurizio going forward. You're going to have a hard time writing and going, I've got another show, please come. And I think that's possibly why in 1990 he did another thing which wasn't involving the public turning up to an exhibition. And this is an art piece that he called Strategy. He wanted to find a fast-track way of feeling like he's a successful artist. So what he did was he bought several copies of the Flash Art magazine. Now, if you're featured in Flash Art magazine, that would generally mean you're quite an important artist. And so then what he does is he arranges the magazines into a pyramid, the one like you might create with playing cards. He then photographed the magazine sculpture and created a fake cover for the Flash Art using this photograph. They look pretty good, what he's done. It looks like he is the cover star of the magazines. He then took the magazines and placed them back on the racks. So when people went and bought them, you know, they probably thought, who's this guy? And that would probably get you in the mind of those people who purchased that. And they may well be thinking, I want to see more about him. But I can't imagine he would have done it with thousands because the costs would have been too much. So he probably did it with a few hundred magazines or something, even if that. I have no idea of the logistics of how he got them back in the shop, though. That's the only thing.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like the opposite of shoplifting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's shop putting.
Yeah, you know, I like shop putting. Or shop unlifting. It's probably the closest criminal offence to it is littering, but it's not even littering, is it?
Well, no.
Because the shops were all doing pretty well out of it if they were selling extra copies. Or are you suggesting maybe he stole the actual copies as he was unlifting his fake ones?
No, for the record, there is no suggestion whatsoever that anything untoward was done other than replacing them.
He was shop unlifting only then.
So he's been a highly successful guy up to thus far, a closed gallery and putting some magazines in a rack. He's not really produced much, which is good because his next major artwork he did was he thought, well, I'm going to start a foundation. So in 1992, he started something called the Oblomov Foundation Scholarship. So what he did was he invited any artists that were happy to not work, like literally not produce any work for a year. He said, yep, if you don't produce any work for a year, I will give you money. That is it. That was what the scholarship was. I mean, he actually named it after a character in a Russian novel by Ivan Gontcharov, which was a lazy 19th century character who does nothing but contemplate life.
So do we know how much this scholarship was worth?
Well, he raised almost 20 million liras. Now, I know liras weren't particularly at that time worth a lot.
It does sound like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The funny thing is, he couldn't find anyone that was interested in taking up the scholarship.
Yeah, well, like you say, if lira's that bad, I mean, what's the point?
Well, so he thinks about this and thinks, well, actually, I'm probably the best person for the job. So what he did was he just took the money and he used it to finance a trip to New York, where, you know, at the time in the 90s, there was a really thriving art scene.
So I guess he arrived in New York with his Flash Art magazine, him on the cover.
Yeah, probably to con them. And that's the kind of thing. So, look, I'm already famous. I'm already in the front of the Flash Art magazine. They like celebrities in America, don't they?
Well, they like modern art, as we've talked about before.
Yeah, Americans have done a lot to support modern art and impressionism. So he's in New York and he does the odd bit of art, but he doesn't really get any recognition for it. But then he meets a fellow Italian, and this guy is involved in a big art exhibition called the Venice Biennale. It's a very, very important art expo. So if you get to show at the Biennale, again, like being in Flash Art, you've made it. So what does Maurizio Cattelan do? Is he thinks, right, well, I've got this lovely space. Looking at the photograph of it, it's in an old Venetian building. Beautiful in Venice, beautiful old ancient building with with columns and a lovely sort of archway. So he thinks, I've got this quite big space. He just simply gets a billboard company to just post an advert for perfume just above the doorway.
So the room that it went into, was that an empty room or was there different art in that room that it went into?
No, I think it was just his giant billboard in this one room. The perfume advert on it looks like a baby formula bottle, I would say. What do you think of that? Do you think it looks like baby formula?
It's like a, I guess it's like a milk airship.
Oh, milk airship, yeah. I've never flown in a milk airship, but I reckon it'd be quite milky fun. Yeah. Oh, yeah, milk airship. By the way, this piece was called Lavorare è un brutto mestiere, which means working is a bad job. And, yeah, probably because he didn't work to do it, he just sort of organised it. So in 1996, after he's now got famous after doing the Venice Biennale, he's got a lot more attention. He's got, well, he's got a show in Amsterdam and he's got very limited time. He's out of ideas again, isn't he? He's thinking, well, I don't know what to do. So he snuck into a local exhibition and stole the artist Paul de Reuze's show and some office equipment. And then what he did was he put them on display, sealed inside their cardboard packing boxes, and he called it another f***ing ready-made. Again, that's a reference to the Marcel Duchamp pre-made toilet. He's out of ideas again, Tom.
Yeah, so this time he is art-lifted from a local gallery and art put into his own exhibition in another different gallery. Yeah, so he's art lifting and art unlifting.
I mean, he's literally stolen these things and put them on display.
So he's stolen materials. I suppose you could argue he's stolen the other artist's ideas as well, though his idea is different.
Yeah, the other artist, Paul de Reuze, is not dissimilar to his work. It's quite interesting. It's just like wooden, slightly surreal sculptures, like a man with a cloud on his back. And there's another one where, which I quite like, which is a man with a big globe for a head. So I reckon he's worth checking out. I'll put a link on the site for him.
How does it work that the other gallery let him take work out of it? I mean, is there no security at Paul, what's his name?
Paul de Reuze show. I looked into this and the gallery has no idea how he pulled it off. So, sorry.
They have no idea how he pulled it off.
How he did the cake.
I mean, like, well, they don't know. What, to this day, they don't know how he got the work from their gallery to another.
Yeah, no, and the office equipment. They don't know how he did it. So my mind is saying inside job. That's what I think. I think someone knew. And of course, now, where would I have heard about Paul de Reuze if Maurizio Cattelan hadn't started?
Well, you know where you'd have heard it of him, from that gallery that you took the stuff from, but I wouldn't go in there too much. Stuff might go missing.
Yeah. If I left my phone in that gallery and... I don't think I'd even bother, like, contacting them to see if I'd left it there, because it probably would have been stolen. Security's pretty lax.
Security's so lax.
Now, that was the 1990s. I'm pretty sure that they're a highly professional gallery and there is no problems with their security. What really got Maurizio Cattelan really famous? I call him his gallery humiliations. So... he subjects gallery owners to various things.
Yeah, well, that's been running through his work since the start, hasn't it, really?
Definitely. He's trying to subvert the galleries, and he's trying to challenge that power that they have over him by making them almost the focus of the artwork or the artwork themselves. He did one in 1993 where he had the owners of a gallery dress up in lion costumes for the entire run of the exhibition, so it's about a month. It was called Tarzan and Jane.
So, like, the gallery owners have agreed
to
this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they thought it was a good idea. I think as well is it's enabling them to be art, isn't it? In 1995, he did another piece called Erotin Le Vrai Lapin, which is Ayrton, the true rabbit. Now, if you look there, right, this is a guy who's dressed up in a pink rabbit costume that looks a lot like a penis rabbit, I think, the costume. Would you say that's right?
It's a rabbit costume and a penis costume at the same time. It's not that it's a rabbit costume that looks like a penis. It is actually intentionally made to look like a penis.
He got him to dress like this for the exhibition. And basically, this guy's a bit of a playboy womanizer. And so this is why he actually got him to dress in that costume itself. So my favourite and most interesting of these pieces is The Perfect Day, which came out in 1999. Milan gallerist Massimo De Carlo was duct taped to a wall. So he's taken this, literally taken duct tape and stuck this guy to a wall. Now, he's quite a portly guy.
You need a lot of duct tape for that, surely.
I think the duct tape budget was probably very, very, very big.
Yeah, what would you estimate?
20 million lira.
What about in terms of rolls? Because no one knows what lira means.
I would guess 20 rolls.
20 rolls, yeah. Because you can imagine if you had to do it yourself and you had to duct tape a portly man to a wall, you know, you'd do it, you'd think it was all fine, and then it would just all peel off in one and he'd fall down.
I don't actually know how they did it, but it was not a good thing because...
And don't tell me the guy died.
No, he didn't die. No, he actually had to be taken down after a couple of hours because he was suffering from exhaustion and lack of oxygen. So again, these pieces really kind of got him really well known. So at this point now, he's bang on well known. So, you've now got this guy who's quite famous. He was asked to organise the 6th International Caribbean Biennale, which was in 1999. The 5 Caribbean art biennales before weren't that spectacular. So, he organised one with Jean Hoffman, a Costa Rican gallery curator. And what he did was he took out all the ads, press releases, you know, all the standard things you need for an art show. International sponsorship and a roster of star artists that were going to be there. But the only thing they didn't have was art. That was it. There was no art. It was just people spending time partying, drinking, listening to music, but there was no art. The actual curator was saying, "The biennial will avoid polluting our visual world with more installations, paintings and artworks." He said this art.
So it was no art as art.
Nothing. No art.
Yeah. So, quite similar to his first exhibition, only like, without the lock on the door, I guess.
So, we've got this guy who's always disappearing. It's very hard to separate him or his work. Catalan has done a lot of self-portraits. This is quite an interesting quote. I got it from the interview with Chris Wiley from the annual art magazine. And he says, "I am always serious. I went into looking for freedom and I became a slave to my work. It gets tedious after a while being chained down, even if the parties are good. More than anything, I just want to escape." So he's done a series of self-referential artworks. And one of them, which particularly highlights the theme of escape, is called Una Domenica a Rivara, a Sunday in Rivara, which is actually a window with a load of sheets tied together. So it looks like someone's just escaped out of a bedroom window by tying sheets together.
But it's Sunday. Is that like a Sunday after a Saturday night and he's escaping out a window?
Oh, yeah, probably. He's probably been up to Maurizio Catalan naughtiness.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
a Saturday night unlifting things.
Shop footing. His sculptures all actually look a bit like caricatures of himself. Got a kind of cartoon-esque quality about him. There's one famous one, which is called Untitled. And it's a little man and he's poking his head through the floor of the gallery. Now, literally, the gallery has cut a hole in the floor and there's a little man and he's peeking through. So he looks like this little man has broken into the gallery.
I think it's like a metaphor for an outsider, you know, he's breaking into the art establishment. What surprised me was that the gallery actually allowed him to cut a hole in the floor to make the piece.
Yeah, well, surely you've got to be allowed to create your work, otherwise they wouldn't show it. I mean, I guess if he just put a little man in the room, it wouldn't have been as interesting an exhibition as actually having a hole in the floor with him poking his head out.
I'd love to have been an invigilator at this gallery because I worked on a Anish Kapoor exhibition once, and that consisted of a giant hole carved into the floor. And I just spent the whole day just saying to people, keep away from the hole. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. I felt very powerful.
Yeah, I guess, like, really, you were, like, looking after the exhibition.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was, but I kind of like the power of risk assessment, the power of health and safety. And when you're on the side of health and safety, you're always right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, where does that fit in with Catalan, then?
Well, there's a hole in the gallery floor, and I'm guessing that people would be told to stay, don't get too close to the hole in the gallery floor. So there he's escaping, and yet in his sculpture he's breaking in. He's got another one which is called Mini Me, which is just a little sculpture of himself, and it even fits very nicely on a bookshelf.
So you think the one with the bookshelf is so he can fit amongst the art books of other artists?
That's a nice thing. He could sit up there with the other artists. But then I would have thought maybe it would be easier just to make a book.
Yeah, I presume there must be collections of his work in a book.
Well, yeah, there are. Other books are available.
Sure, yeah.
I don't need to say that. Books. There's another self-portrait, which is him hanging on a clothes rail, and it's called We Are the Revolution. Now, the thing is there was an artist in 1972 called Joseph Beuys who had a piece with the same name, and Joseph Beuys said, everyone is an artist. Basically, the idea is that everyone that is creative is an artist. So just by being human, you're a creative person. But Catalan, he turned it and said, and he said, oh, I'm not an artist. I don't really consider myself an artist. I make art, but it's a job. And he said that once to Artspace, the magazine. That was in an interview. And that's the thing. He doesn't consider himself an artist. So that's a kind of statement on that. On to more of these sculptural things. One of the most controversial ones he did was one called Him, which was made in 2001. And what it is, it's a model of a kneeling Hitler in a tweed jacket. And this sculpture is normally placed facing a wall. When you walk into the gallery, you'll just see what looks like a little child-sized figure kneeling. And it's only when you get up close and you look around the front, you see that it's actually that of Hitler. You know, it's quite shocking. And he's still a figure that's in our sort of public imagination. I suppose it's quite a shock if you go in and you've got a little Hitler there. I wouldn't like to see a little Hitler.
Yeah, I think I like it. I think I feel like I've seen that piece before. I can't think where, but... there's no... You wouldn't expect this piece of Catalan, given his previous pieces, because he's really, like, talking here. He's not... It's not a form of escapism. It's like... It's talking directly to your psyche, isn't it? Putting a little Hitler... The public imagination, as you said. It's quite different from his other works, isn't it?
Yes, there's a series of sculpture work that he's done that are different. I mean, he'd done this thing where he's got three arms doing a Nazi salute. Now, he's not a fascist, but they do raise questions when you see those kind of symbols because they're in our psyche and quite disturbing. The thing he got most famous for was a life-size, lifelike sculpture of Pope John Paul II, and he's just been struck by a meteorite. And there's glass all over the floor, so I assume the meteorite's come through the gallery and hit him and knocked him down.
Stained glass?
No, just glass, as in like glass through the sky.
All right, yeah.
And it's called La Nona Hora, which means the ninth hour. And that's when Jesus, very Eastery, apparently Jesus asked God and said he's forsaken him on the ninth hour. So he's been on the cross for nine hours on the cross. That's uncomfortable. I mean, you can imagine some people get quite offended by this. Because, you know, you've got a big meteorite on the Pope. And when it was actually shown in Warsaw in Poland, two Polish MPs tried to remove the meteorite and stand the figure upright. So they actually got upset by it because they thought, this poor old sculpture of the Pope, he's got a big meteorite on him. There was another Polish priest, I believe, who actually said, well, no, it's all right, because it's like the burden that he carries. I don't know, the holy burden, I suppose.
Yeah, well, maybe the MPs thought he's got enough of a burden of the world on his shoulders. Stop treating him like this. You're putting a rock on him.
I'm more happy doing a podcast than I would be doing being the Pope. Unless you did a Pope cast. Does he do Pope?
Yeah, he does do Pope cast, doesn't he? Like every Sunday at least, or Friday.
And another controversial one is three boys hanging from a tree. So he's done a sculpture, and now this was
So hang on, when you say hanging, you're hanging by their necks.
A sculpture, yeah. Three boys hanging a tree in Milan Square. Now, it was actually called Untitled 2000, and it was in 2008. A lot of people got quite offended by it, but a lot of people will watch the news, watch children getting killed on the news and not think a single thing. He's creating something that's artificial, sticking it in a populated town square, and people are getting really upset by this. And it's quite interesting. Someone, in fact, got so upset, Franco Di Benedetto, that he actually climbed up the tree to cut down two of the boys and then actually fell several metres onto the ground and was taken to hospital.
That's a karmic injury, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, why does he have to rescue sculptures? Maurizio Catalan was quoted in the Metro newspaper talking about this event. And he said, you know, certain images and objects are even more powerful when they disappear. So you think he's had it cut down. Probably the sight of three hanging ropes is quite a powerful symbol in itself. By the way,
or two in this case.
Well, no, actually, I failed to mention that the third one was cut down by the firemen. I suppose they probably thought that it looked off balance. Because
maybe they got confused with Catalan and a cat. Maybe they thought there was a cat in the tree.
Yeah, some of them, we've got to go and rescue the Catalan in the tree. another one of his oeuvres, if I can say oeuvre, I've always wanted to say oeuvre, and now I have. He works with stuffed animals a lot. The sort of stuffed animals he works with are things like dead dogs, hanging horses. These are actually taxidermy animals, hanging horses from the ceiling. He started off with a live donkey. So he actually started off with live animals. And he did this in America in 1994. And it was...
So this is post Damien Hirst.
I think it's around the same time or maybe after. The gallery viewer would walk in. And they'd see a live donkey. They'd be confronted with a live donkey, a chandelier, and a bucket and a bit of grass. I assume that's just to feed the donkey. And it's called Enter at Your Own Risk. Do not touch, do not feed, no smoking, no photographs, no dogs, thank you. Now the problem was, the donkey made so much noise at night time that the exhibition had to close early because it was just impossible having an exhibition with a live donkey. An exhibition with anything. They say don't work with children and animals, but don't work with live donkeys for long periods of time. I think that's always going to be a problem. So from that point onwards, he only worked with dead animals. He's done some other interesting ones. He did one of a squirrel that's sitting dead at a chair, at the end of a table, and there's a gun next to it on the floor, and it looks like it's apparently killed itself in a suicide. And a personal favourite of mine is an elephant in a sheet, and it's got eye holes, and there's a space for its trunk to go through, and it looks like it's an elephant pretending to be a ghost. And it was called Not Afraid of Love. It's kind of like literally like an elephant in the room. So that pretty much is his career. Now, in 2011, he's done all these works. You've got like the Little Men, the Little Him, mini hymns. You've got the perfume bottle billboard. You've got like the sign. You've got all these dead stuffed animals. You've got the Pope with the big meteorite on it. You've got hanging horses hanging from ceilings. So you've got all these sculptures, right? And you're retiring. So what are you going to do?
Yeah. Okay. So I've got all these sculptures. I'm retiring. I don't know. Why would he bother retiring? It doesn't. Has he actually retired?
Well, kind of retired. I think he gets to a point where he's always been an art outsider. Now he's super famous, so he's not even on the outside anymore. So consequently, everything he does is part of the establishment, and he's always been someone that creates stuff that isn't part of the establishment, although he's obviously his work sell for a lot of money and he's kind of very establishment. He speaks to the Guggenheim and he decides to create a piece called All. Basically, now the Guggenheim, the big museum in New York, they arrange for him to hang nearly all his works in the middle atrium, I suppose it's the middle atrium, the middle of the Guggenheim from the ceiling. So they've got ropes hanging down with every single piece nearly that he's made, or every single major work hanging from the ceiling. So you can imagine it's a nightmare of organisation, and it looks like the ceiling could fall down at any point because the stress and the strain of holding all those objects all at once, hanging down on ropes, it's just a lot. It's just a lot, isn't it?
So we don't know if he's changed his name and he might still be working. That would be for another episode later on, I guess.
No, there is a few pieces that he's done since he retired.
Oh, right, okay. Since his supposed retirement.
Yeah, so after his supposed retirement, there's still been a few extra pieces, and this one's got a particularly interesting story. Just after President Trump had come into office, the White House emailed the Guggenheim Museum in New York and asked if they would loan a Vincent van Gogh 1888 painting called Landscape with Snow. We can't loan you that. It's in transit, so which is fair enough. You can't loan them the painting. But the curator informed them that they can have use of the latest Maurizio Cattelan piece called America. And it's an 18-carat gold toilet. And it's actually installed in the Guggenheim. So they offered him that. So they offered him they said you can have it. It's worth about £1 million, this toilet.
Is it used as a toilet, or is it used as an art piece to look at?
No, it's a toilet. You can go in there. Now it's a £1 million toilet, and you can go and you can use that toilet.
Yeah.
The problem is, right, it's so popular, massive queues to use it because a lot of Instagram photographs and everything. So you probably, if you were lucky, do a number one at most, and probably not even that. If you wanted to do a number two in that, you couldn't get away with it.
Yeah, so this again, it's like, I keep thinking of Damien Hirst when we're talking about it, but it's like he did the skull, didn't he, made of diamonds.
Yeah.
It was so lavish. It's almost like a take on that, is it? Or was that totally wrong?
To me, you know, you look at this. You've got this super luxury item and everyone can use it. It's a thing that everyone has to use. Everyone has to go to the toilet. The reason why Andy Warhol said, I like Coca-Cola, because if you're a multi-millionaire or you're a beggar on the street, you all drink the same cola. And that was why he liked the reproduction of Coca-Cola, because it was kind of like that. There is no posh Coca-Cola for a rich person. It's the same for everyone. And it's the same kind of thing with this toilet, although it's a gold toilet. What was interesting, of course, is the fact that this was offered to the White House. They rang up Catalan.
Who's they? Hang on a minute. You like, they rang up?
They're the journalists and the press rang up Catalan to try and get a quote on this.
To get a comment on the usage in the White House.
Yes. And Catalan said, "What's the point of our life? Everything seems absurd until we die, and then it makes sense." And then he just hung up. So that's pretty much it for the Maurizio Catalan podcast. I must say, there's loads of stuff that I didn't have time to cover on the podcast. So we've got loads of show notes where you can get extra information. If you just go to modernartisrubbish.com, please remember, if you can subscribe to us, you can get us on iTunes. We have a Facebook page, Modern Art is Rubbish.
And yeah, don't try any of these pieces at home.
No. No,
don't. unless you're prepared to risk injury, such as falling from a tree.
Yeah, and yeah, don't try and rescue any of them. And if you have an exhibition, I would say it's important to make sure that you do turn up and you do not steal other people's artwork. Any goodbyes?
Adios.